It's 5:45 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezril, and we've been talking about the government's food aid program. Some opposition MPs are questioning the value and the actual value of the packs, which the government has said is actually at 100 ringgit each. MPs have been receiving an array of food packs ranging from 35 ringgit to 85 and then 100 ringgit. So we're now going to cross over to Irene Xavier, Executive Director of Persatuan Sabah Wanita. Irene, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hello.
So first off, can we get a clear picture of who is supposed to receive food aid and how long a pack is meant to last?
If you are talking about the aid that we are giving, we actually give aid for 2 weeks because the initial MPO was for 2 weeks. So we have sort of kept that habit. So we give people food for 2 weeks, and somehow people are careful and they try to stretch it a bit more.
And so what do you think a 100 ringgit food aid pack would actually look like? Does this match to what's being distributed on the ground, in your opinion?
Anyway, our food pack would be a thing like rice for Malaysians and Indonesians, rice, oil, like a 10 kg rice. Mm. If it is a bigger family, then we might give 20 kg. And then oil, 3 kgs or 5 kgs, depending on the size of the family. And then sugar for 2 kgs, some salt. We give tea because it's a bit cheaper than coffee. And then we give, if they're children, then we give milk, which is a bit expensive. Mm. So we don't give milk to everyone. But if there are children, then we give milk and a little bit of Milo. Then we give sardine, mihun, and eggs. That would more or less come up to 100 ringgit.
Right. And just on that pack, I think that does seem to be, and this is a point that Hezril brought up earlier, which is the fact that perhaps there's a need to customize each of the food packs the government gives out. And you seem to be doing it on your end. How do you actually get through that process, right? Do you have a very close contact and close relationship with the communities that you work with, and then you have a clearer understanding of the kinds of necessities that they might need?
If we have the time, we actually ask them what they would like. And usually these are the things that they say. So some communities would want dal. Some communities would want atta flour. Mm. So it depends a bit on the community. If we were giving to non-Indonesian migrant communities, then they don't really want mihun or maggi mee, then we replace it with other things, potatoes and so on.
What are your thoughts on the ongoing controversy where several MPs have claimed that the food packs being distributed actually don't amount to the 100 ringgit that they're supposed to?
Looking at the food packs, I think they're correct. These are much less than 100 ringgit. Mm. Sometimes we could get all those things that they said there for less than 70 ringgit.
Right. And also looking at this whole process, how do you think, in terms of what the government is doing, how can this process be more transparent and accountable?
At the moment, the government doesn't seem to have any processes in place. There are no ways in which anyone can supervise or question or anything that the government is doing. They just decide by themselves. And their policies just seem to be done without much consultation with anyone. There are other groups in the country who have actually consulted a variety of communities in Malaysia. like Suharto or ILO, but the government doesn't seem to have done that at all. Maybe some groups like the child rights groups have actually thought to have a kind of a consultation. They organized it and they spoke to people in the Women and Children's Ministry. But other than that, the government doesn't seem to consult people very much.
And just as a follow-up to that question, there are several groups that are vulnerable right now during this MCO. So is the government's, at least to your knowledge, is the government's food aid program reaching out to the various communities that need it?
The government, first of all, it says that it will not give food to non-citizens. That means it excludes a large number of people living here and working in Malaysia, the migrants, the refugees, which have quite big communities in themselves. So no one is providing food aid for them. They actually won't even know where to go and complain if they don't have food. So it is usually NGOs, some religious institutions and so on, which pick up their need and then they sort of prepare food for them. But the government is very insistent that they will not provide aid to migrants and refugees, which is quite sad because you don't want this group of people to starve while they're here in Malaysia. And they can't even go back to their home country. So they are stuck here, so we need to feed them.
So with that said, what kind of solutions and what kind of ideas have NGOs like yourself have been pitching to the government in order to, I guess, get around this really bad situation that we're currently seeing with these communities?
We have been calling on the government in all kinds of ways, in letters and memos and statements and press statements. We have said that they cannot ignore the migrants. Then you may end up having a situation similar to the one in Singapore. The migrants, actually, no one knows whether they are suffering the symptoms of COVID-19. No one knows. No one has tested them. They haven't gone for any testing. So I think this is, even if you look at it from a very selfish kind of viewpoint, it is in our own interest to make sure that they are fed and that they are healthy and that they do not get infected with the COVID-19, because ultimately it'll come back to all the others in the country.
What else can be done at this point to ensure that food aid distribution efforts are more efficient and effective when in terms of, coordination between the government and NGOs?
Yeah, I think they should set up some kind of coordinating body where people can make their requests and make complaints, make suggestions and so on, to make the process smoother and more efficient. There are enough people within the NGO circles who are prepared to do this. There are groups that have actually drawn up like SOPs on childcare and so on. So they have the expertise on many things, and the government should use these things.
Irene, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Okay, thank you.
That was Irene Xavier, Executive Director at Persatuan Sahabat Wanita. If you'd like to contribute to their efforts in providing food aid to those in need, you can head over to their Facebook page at Sahabat Wanita. Of course, Irene was, talking to us about the food aid programs and distribution efforts by the government. I think so far it's just been quite a bleak picture. Communities that need it, communities that are vulnerable don't seem to be getting the help they need.
That's right. And I hope that, the MCO continues to be extended, that the government reconsiders, their decision, and that certainly more coordination be done to address, I think like Irene said, it is very much in our interest to ensure that I think our refugee communities and our migrants are taken care of, because which was, you know, which is something we'll be talking about after this, right? And you know, to ensure that I think, you know, if they're taken care of, I think it will help prevent a lot of problems in the long term, especially when it comes to the COVID-19 issue. But I think it's also it's in times like these that we certainly shouldn't lose our humanity. You know, we should really come together to do as much as possible for others. And you know, it's Ramadan. It's a time for giving and forgiveness. It's a time of mercy. So, you know, I mean, why not?
Yeah, and I guess just on that note also, we have a message here from Bobby that says, one thing we can learn from events in the US recently is that such emergency situations require a more localized, rather state action than from the federal. And I think that's why the work of NGOs is so key here, right? That you are able to reach out to those who sometimes in the eyes of the government were forcefully invisible for a while.
Yeah. And that is a good point in terms of localized and state action. But, you know, I'm just wondering, based on all the MPs the station has talked to over the past few weeks, just how, you know, how much resources they have. Like, we understand, for instance, that, you know, the opposition MPs have received less allocation this year as compared to government MPs, and how that... you know, stretches not just into COVID-19 efforts, but also just the overall obligations that MPs and ADUNs have that extend beyond the pandemic, right? These ongoing things that they can't ignore when it comes to their constituents. So it seems that perhaps they may be in a tight bind when it comes to, you know, trying to help both their constituents and migrants in their, you know, in their immediate constituencies. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if you have any thoughts, you can send them to us. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can call us 7733-2900. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, some music. Tame Impala with Disciples. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.